We are going to continue the hour by talking about civil discourse. This week, Duke University is hosting a multi-day seminar for college faculty members to help them deal with the challenge of talking about hot-button issues and difficult conversations in class. It's based on a class that is being taught at Duke called Virtuous Thinking in an Age of Political Polarization. John Rose is the professor who teaches that class. He's also guiding that seminar, and he joins us now in the studio to talk about that same issue. Professor Rose, thank you so much for being with us today. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
So the class is Virtuous Thinking in an Age of Political Polarization. How did it get started?
In the wake of the 2016 national election, I, like many people, came to see that it was undeniable our country was coming apart. People weren't talking to each other. There was intense tribalism. We were very quick to demonize people with whom we had political disagreements. I wanted to do something about it, and I work in a university, so for me, the place to start was in the classroom.
What constitutes virtuous thinking?
I believe in the virtues, that they're real. Things like courage, even-handedness, humility, charity, hearing each other's remarks in the best possible terms, being willing to learn from as big a variety of people as possible, admitting that you can be wrong. When you do those things, you're not just a better person, you're a better learner and a better participant in democracy.
So how does the class work? This is, I mean, from what I've read about it and seen, like, this is hands-on. You're getting into difficult issues with students and kind of guiding them as the conversation is proceeding, right?
Yeah, that's right. We go for it. My syllabus doesn't shy away from the toughest issues. In fact, I began my semester with an anonymous poll. I asked students, do you self-censor? Why do you self-censor? And on what issues? And those are the issues that I put on the syllabus, whatever it is, race, transgender athletes, abortion, you name it. I don't start there, though. I spend a portion of the semester reviewing the literature on how polarization is affecting our thinking. It's actually making us dumber versions of ourselves. And once you do that and you get people to kind of step back and look at human nature, get them to see that perhaps we don't want everything in our lives to be political. Certain spheres of human experience are more important than politics. You do that, then you go to the case studies. I've discovered is the better order.
Speaking with John Rose again, professor at Duke University, teaching a class called Virtuous Thinking in an Age of Political Polarization, now teaching a seminar this week to other professors at other faculty members, so kind of exporting that class to hopefully other universities around the country. So in your experience in terms of getting people to have those positive conversations about tough issues in a way when we're not tearing each other's throats apart, like what works, what doesn't? What strategies actually move the dial there?
You know, I try to make it normative. You can talk to people all day long about, well, let's put democracy back together. But in the end, I think the most effective strategy for motivating students is to get them to want to be better people. My training is actually in ethics, not political science, and I think this matters for the course. I preach love, and I'm not embarrassed to say it. The hero in my class is Martin Luther King Jr., and his sermon on loving your enemies is the culmination of the course. So it's really a course in nonviolence, putting down our swords, listening to each other, and working towards peaceful compromise, and which is what we do in democracy. We're not going to all agree, but we do have goods in common, and we have to reason towards them as best we can. And you know, in my view, tolerance is a virtue too. It doesn't mean indifference. It's a sort of a patient forbearance of either a perceived wrong or a disagreement for the sake of keeping alive life together, possible friendship together.
Are there issues that are tougher to accomplish this with than others?
Oh, for sure. And on many issues, you know, we'll go an hour, 15 minutes, and nobody's budged a bit, but that's not the point of the course. The point of the course is to get people to be better conversation partners. There are topics on which, for instance, I did a day on Israel-Palestine conflict this past term for the first time, in which you never get past a conversation about how hard it is to have the conversation and why that is. You know, students will say things like, well, whenever I say something critical, I'm accused of this, and that doesn't seem fair. All right, let's talk about that and have others respond. You never even get to the issue itself, right? But this is where you have to start. Take a step back.
One of the things that I recently read, Duke put out a piece about the class that I was reading earlier, and two lines kind of jumped out at me simultaneously. One is something that you said, which is that the goal is truth, not victory, which I really like. Mm-hmm. The other was like six paragraphs down where whoever the author of the piece was, I can't think of it off the top of my head, quoted the statistic that most people on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, left and right, kind of agree on one thing, which is that a lot of our disagreements are disagreements over basic facts. Like, this is, we're to the point now where we can't agree on that. So how do you achieve that goal of truth, not victory, when the disagreement is over what truth is, and that's where the conflict is?
Yeah, that's a tough question. First of all, I tell my students, I'll know you're looking for truth over victory if you're conversing in such a way that you're always trying to keep the conversation going rather than shutting it down. Okay, so when we engage in what I call intellectual violence, we're trying to humiliate or silence the other person, admit that they're wrong, make them look stupid. I discourage that in my class. Now, you get to an important question, though. What happens when you have facts and I deny them? This gets hard. My response to that first is that facts aren't going to settle everything. There are certain people who say, if only we were just hyper-rational and we left emotion out of this, they would all say, no. And emotions have a proper place. There's a reason we respond with intense sympathy to pictures or images.
To what motivates us the care in the first place.
Yeah, right? Indeed. So statistics have a place, but they don't solve everything. My response always when we get to an impasse is to go deeper and say, well, why don't you trust those statistics? Well, let me tell you about a media you can't trust. Well, why don't you trust them? Well, let me go and keep going and going. Finally, you'll get to a deeper disagreement, which maybe now we're getting somewhere, all right?
What is your best success story, like in a classroom?
I have had two sets of friends of different political persuasions take my class for the sake of trying to put back together their friendships, and they have. And that made me feel terrific.
Nice. Are you two for two?
Is there
a third
one?
Okay,
yes.
Cool. There's also these other eight that I'm not going to talk about,
No, two for two.
Awesome. Speaking with John Rose, Duke University. So we're talking about this class, but like you're exporting it out to other professors to teach in other classes, and presumably this is something that can go beyond the classroom that we can apply in our own lives. So those of us who are trying to be better people and to be better in conversation, what's your advice to the rest of us?
First of all, I know I'm sitting in a UNC station, but I really
I am
want Duke
wearing
to be
this shirt.
Yes,
yeah.
You are.
I have Duke shirts at home.
Okay.
It's just not the shirt I'm wearing today.
Well, I want Duke to be the leader here. And I think there's a real demand on the part of students for classes like this. And I think university teachers across the country are trying to figure out how to do this. And it's tricky and it's scary. And so the point of the seminar is to get people in a room who are committed to it. Some of us have done more of it than others. Compare notes. I'll share what little wisdom I have. I'm not a horse whisperer. I've learned from trial and error. And together, we're going to try to spread this. And you know, we need each other's reassurance because it is a little scary, right? But to feel like you're part of a broader movement certainly helps.
And for people who just want to be better people, what's your first piece of advice?
Look within. I think there's a temptation in our modern politics to draw a line between good and bad at the edge of our party and say, I'm on this side of this cause, therefore I'm a good person. I like to quote Solzhenitsyn in my class and tell my students that the line dividing good and evil runs through every individual human heart, including yours. Start there.
The people you're citing are political figures, like still actively political figures, right? Solzhenitsyn, Martin Luther King. What do you do with folks who reject the premise and those kind of basic figures that you're starting with?
So they don't agree with the authorities,
right?
Mine is a class in which I don't take political positions, so I don't say you have to think like this person. The positions I take are one of academic norms. You have to give reasons. You have to be willing to listen to the other side. And you can have what views you want and reject whatever views you want that I provide to you, provided you do so in a spirit of humility and charity. If you do that, basically you can say what you want. So like, you didn't ask me this as the first question, but most people do. Mm. Well, what happens if a student says this, right? And it's always some atrocious view.
Right.
My response is, my students don't actually have that view. Admissions does a better job than you think. But furthermore, I think that when people do things in a spirit of love and charity, those problems resolve themselves. Mm. You're not going to get comments like that.
How optimistic are you?
It depends. When you zoom out and you look at the country, I'm pessimistic. But when I look at everyday experiences, and I say, well, what about that comment? What about that moment? Then I'm optimistic, because in the end, our politics really is just a set of interpersonal relationships that writ large, right? Mm. I mean, that's what it comes down to. So if we multiply what we're doing in the classroom tenfold, hundredfold, in all of your relationships, then you begin to change a culture, and that changes our politics. So I'm going to be an optimist. Rather, I take that back, hope. I'm a person of hope.
All
it's
right.
Different.
Speaking with John Rosen, as we wrap up this conversation, people want to know more about your class or about just civil discourse in general. Is there a good place to go?
You can go to our website. We're at duke.edu, and you can find us there.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you'll be hearing about us because, well, one of your sons or daughters attended a college or a university where they got a class like this, because as they say, well, what starts in the classroom doesn't stay in the classroom, and maybe it'll make it work its way into your workplace too.
The class is Virtuous Thinking in an Age of Political Polarization. John Rose, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.